I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the fifth season of Doctor Who, The Tomb of the Cybermen. Which consists of four episodes, which aired from September 2nd, 1967 to September 23rd, 1967. And those were...
True facts!
Today we have a special guest with us. It's not Ben Padden!
Hi.
It's Vincent E.L. We decided to get someone else to talk about Cybermen for once.
I'm European.
Do your best Ben Padden impression. Go!
No, I'm not gonna do that. I feel like it's bad enough that I'm doing this really, really fake American accent.
Your fake American accent's better than the fake American accent in this serial.
In the serial, yeah.
I was going to get to that.
When they say, oh, they're English, and I was like, oh, they're American? I didn't know that these characters were supposed to be American.
How could you not tell that they're American?
They are very American.
They say American things. They like hot dogs.
They have a radio announcer voice.
They do. But we are jumping it way ahead. We haven't even started talking about the serial yet.
Tomb of the Cybermen, episode one.
Expedition to the Cyber City.
Now it's part one. Don't touch that dial.
It opens with Jamie and Victoria and the Doctor and the TARDIS, which is great because Jamie gets to explain to someone else time travel.
Victoria gets to be impressed that the TARDIS is bigger on the inside, which is a treat for the Doctor.
I said last serial that it was the first serial that felt like an actual finale. This feels like the first premiere that feels like an actual season premiere. Because it starts with, like, a really nice establishing shot of the TARDIS. It does this really, really cool slow zoom-in thing. And I thought it was really cool. I do have to say, Chris Terry pointed something out. Because he's, like, watching ahead of us. Because we've gotten him back into Classic Who, specifically, too. He said something that's now bugging me about this serial. Is that Victoria, her characterization seems a little odd considering, like, the events of the Evil of the Daleks happened, like, yesterday.
I was thinking that the whole time, pretty much. And I feel like there's one scene that we'll get to that feels like it was kind of inserted afterward after they realized, oh shit, this is, we need to address this.
She forgot. She's a human being with emotions.
Should probably put in a scene in part three about that.
But no, I'm very happy that Jamie's like, oh, it's the TARDIS. It's time travel. I know all about it. I'll explain it to you. Because he spent so long being the character who's like, what's an airplane? What is anything? I don't know. And now he's like, I know all about it. I'll tell you later.
And I think it's also interesting that we now have two companions who are both from the past.
Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't happen a lot. And also, there was this moment where Victoria concludes that because the Doctor can time travel, he must be old. And I can't figure out the logic behind the assumption that he must be. I mean, you can come to a suspicion that he might be very old, but just based on the fact that he time traveled, that's the only thing that she knows at this point. And she goes, oh, you must be. And then she's about to, like, guess a number. And it's like, there's no logical direct step from you're a time traveler to you must be very, very old.
There's not enough evidence there.
I mean, he could have started time traveling last week. There's nothing in just the act of time traveling that implies that you're necessarily very, very old. I mean, Marty McFly isn't very, very old.
He drops a number. He says he's 450 years old.
How old was he when him and Susan bolted from Gallifrey.
It might be something that's established somewhere in extended universe material.
I feel like he'd have to be like a few hundred years old, right?
Did they bolt from Gallifrey, though? I mean, he bolted from Gallifrey. Was she with him at that point?
Yes, if you're counting like New Who stuff, because there was the scene with Clara.
Where they were both
They were stealing the TARDIS. And I mean, I feel like she's still relatively young. I don't think she's like old.
But is she like 50? You know what I mean?
I think she was actually a teenager. I think Time Lords probably slow down aging later in life if they live that long before they regenerate. Or they age at normal pace. I don't know.
Interesting questions. From just this first scene.
How does the Doctor age?
And then the Doctor wants Victoria to change clothes, and it's a little bit awkward.
It's okay, so yeah, it's a little awkward, but I also feel like it's in character stuff, you know, that happens.
Well, he does say it's not practical for her to wear that while they're going on adventures or something, and then he sends Jamie to show her where the clothes are.
So I assume he's just like, it's there.
That seems to imply that she at least gets to pick the clothes, but then later she's unhappy with the clothes, so it's like...
because she does, she comes out and she has, it's not a short dress, but she's from the Victorian era. Her, like, shins are showing. There's a whole scene that goes on, like, well, after she comes out of the TARDIS. And I'm just sitting there like, do you think she's uncomfortable? Do you think that's bothering her? Do you think she's like, I'm practically naked? And finally, after, like, all this plot stuff happens and, like, other characters go, she brings it up. And I was like, I'm glad they mentioned it. She's like, are you sure this dress? It's really short. And the Doctor has a line where he's like, Jamie's is shorter.
Which is something I said before it happened, too.
Yeah, the Doctor says, a bit short. Oh, I shouldn't worry about that. Look at Jamie's. And then Jamie is like, hey, I'll have you know that...
It was really cute, but I spent like a considerable amount of time before that scene happened just being like, I wonder how she's feeling about this.
The thing I wasn't sure about was, like, did she pick out those clothes, or did Jamie pick out those clothes, or were there just not enough clothes for her to pick from, for her to pick something she'd be comfortable in?
Or was it just like the TARDIS was like, this is what you're wearing, and just showed her like a room with one outfit in it?
The TARDIS picked it out and was like, this'll be cute. I don't know. It is.
That's an interesting question. But yeah, but you said that though, like, you were like, I wonder if she's like concerned about that being short. And I was like, I said, Jamie's showing more leg than she is. And then that scene happened like 20 minutes later.
That's like, you're predicting something that happened decades ago.
We're so smart. We can see into the past, the future of the past.
Outside of the TARDIS.
Well, he's like, we're going to leave. Jamie's like, give it a smooth takeoff so that we don't scare Victoria.
And the Doctor says, a smooth takeoff? What a nerve.
Which he's grown a lot as a person, because he didn't just immediately threaten to throw him off the TARDIS.
Hartnell would have just been like, get the fuck off my ship. But two likes Jamie.
Two's just so offended. Excuse you.
I feel like Two has more of a soft spot for Jamie than the Doctor has had with any previous companion.
I think that's fair.
Maybe Vicky. But still not,
you know,
it's still
Susan.
Not as...
Susan and Vicky, I think the Doctor had a soft spot for.
Yeah, but one of them he left on a fucking planet.
But yeah, outside the TARDIS, we're on this alien planet, and there are people exploring it.
The first person we see is Toberman.
Ah, Toberman.
Oh, Toberman. Is a character that's in this serial.
Yeah.
Two serials in a row with strong, silent people of color. This character is way worse than Kimmel, though. Kimmel at least had some...
Kimmel turns out to be adorable, which was kind of fun.
And Toberman turns out to be a hero, but he's still very, very stereotypical, and he's a servant. They don't use the word slave, but it seems like that's the implication. And Toberman's boss is Kaftan, which is a type of clothing.
Oh.
I did not know that.
A Middle Eastern dress of some sort, I think.
I don't think we knew that because...
That's a Vince fact!
It took us so long to catch her name.
In my notes, she is written down as E-L, not after you. It's short for Evil Lady.
Because she was clearly very evil.
Yeah, it was very clear very quickly that she was the bad guy.
I'm going to start calling Vincent Evil Lady.
That works for me. But yeah, Kaftan is Toberman's boss. And Klieg is her cohort, Eric Klieg.
Who's also fairly obviously evil.
Yeah, both of them are very clearly the villain. And I think it's interesting that neither of them seems like the other one's boss.
No, and they also don't seem to spend a lot of time, like, planning together. Like, they don't seem to spend a lot of time in the same room.
And when they do, it's usually one of them encouraging the other to be more evil. But it's both of them do that. I mean, she might do it a little bit more like, hey, be more evil. But, like, they're both the bad guy.
I do think she's a little more...
evil?
Yeah, a little more manipulative, too. Mm.
She's a little more manipulative, and he's a little more, I guess, active in terms of, like, going down the hatch and that stuff. So they have, like, different roles, but I feel like they have pretty equal roles, which is surprising given how little of an equal role Toberman gets in that kind of team, if you can call it that.
I read a piece of trivia about Toberman, which is that in the original script, he was supposed to be deaf, which is why he doesn't speak so much, and he was going to have a hearing aid, which was somehow going to be foreshadowing about Cyberman stuff.
Ooh,
but
it's not great.
But that's why he doesn't speak so much. But that still leads to that whole, like, the problem of, like, that the last serial had of...
Knew Who kind of did that, where people put things in their ears and then it became a whole Cyberman thing.
Sure, but that was a Bluetooth. It wasn't a hearing aid.
Yeah, no, but it was still people with things in their ears. It's a connection.
But the people on this planet are archaeologists
and people from the just running the ship, because there's Captain Hopper and his crew, and there's Professor Perry and his expedition crew.
Yeah, and so Perry is like the guy leading the expedition, but really it's, you know, the bad guys sort of like tagging on, letting him think he's the leader.
The bad guys are benefactors, or they're
sponsoring it.
I guess they're financiers, and they're not supposed to get involved, but they're getting involved.
So I like that, like, their method of archaeology is to just sort of blow up random rocks and hope for the best.
Because they're like, this should be the entrance, and they blow it up, and they're like, nope, it's not there. But, oh wait, look over to the right. There's the entrance that you just cleared up because of that explosion.
Rogers is the explosions guy. I don't know how many times he gets referred to in any context, but he's the explosions guy. Rogers sets the explosive, and then they're like, man, you just blew yourself a pair of doors, says Hopper.
Exactly. Delivery and everything.
Man, you just blew yourself a pair of doors.
It sounds like someone badly paraphrasing the Italian job.
Then they go there. They go to the doors.
The doors that have been blown.
Well, Captain says 50 pounds for the first man who opens the door. And Red Shirt gets electrocuted by the door. It's black and white, but he's clearly wearing a red shirt. He steps forward just silently, and he goes up to the door because, you know, he's going to show off and he's going to get 50 pounds, which I'm sure with inflation in the future, I'm sure that's a lot of money. What I'm saying is basically he's doing it for nothing. And he grabs the door and he gets electrocuted.
Which was not readily apparent to me because I just thought he, like, caught fire.
It was not done in a way where the way an electrocution would have been done today.
Which is wiggly lines
over their body.
Which is not the way it would look in reality either, but at least it gives the idea a lot more clearly. But instead it was an explosive set behind the thing.
Yeah, which, you know, this serial's not opposed to wiggly lines.
No.
We're gonna get a lot of wiggly lines, you guys.
They just got the technology for squiggly lines.
So yeah, the dude dies.
And we meet our designated I don't trust you guys guy. Because we gotta have one of those. It's Viner. Viner is the designated I don't trust you guys guy. And he is also the wormy guy. Usually the I don't trust you guys guy is kind of one of the bad guys or something like a bad guy. This guy's just kind of wormy and kind of, you know, scared of stuff.
We're all doomed guy.
He's the paranoid dude. So that's a little bit of a change.
Viner's position in the group is social media. Because he's Viner. He's a Viner.
No.
Oh,
no.
Right.
No.
Okay.
No.
He takes vines of the...
I mean, yeah. And no, like...
No.
Like, hey, look. Like, we just found the city of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
No.
It's okay. So, the Doctor and Jamie and Victoria show up, which I think this is the first, like, Victoria shows up and she's in her short dress, which again is not actually that short.
And they kind of back into them. They're just sort of backing down this hill and they, like, bump into the people and pull guns on them.
Yeah, and then Viner's like, oh, you killed this guy. You must be from a different expedition that's competing. Our expedition's supposed to be secret, but you found out about it somehow. Paranoid stuff.
Like, we don't really know what's going on, but I'm the Doctor and I'm going to put this little doodad on this door. And now it's fine to open.
Also, I'm pretty sure the doctor's probably like, we didn't know you guys were here, but we heard a gigantic fucking explosion and thought we'd check it out.
Yeah, so someone mentions Cybermen and there's a dramatic sting as it, like, pushes in on the doctor and Jamie, but there are pictures of the Cybermen on the walls right next to them. And the episode is called The Tomb of the Cybermen. The expedition reveals that they're looking for the Tomb of the Cybermen. And that's supposed to be a big reveal, but it's, I think we knew that already.
I really love the Cybermen stencils.
I love the implication that Cybermen make stencils. Can you picture a Cyberman preparing those things and then putting the spray with this up on the wall and like, I'm gonna decorate our tomb. It's gonna be really pretty.
Picking out colors.
It's just
one
Cyberman
nice.
Who's just gone around painting himself. And he knows it's himself. Damn it, Carl. Stop putting your face on everything.
But I look really good in this one.
Cyberman Carl.
So the doctor kind of, I don't know how he's like, we're fine. Just, I could probably help you figure out how to get in. Which the doctor helps way too much in the serial.
This planet, by the way, is Talos. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. There's a little bit of a disagreement between Hopper and Perry as well. Hopper is like, this is dangerous. My red shirt just died. And Perry is like, yeah, but science though. I mean, yeah, the guy's dead, but we gotta look for science stuff.
But the doctor disarms the door, and Jamie's like, I'll open it. I got this. It'll be fine. And then completely fails to open the door, and he's like, well, I haven't been getting very much exercise lately, so...
And then the doctor is like, let's get the servant to do it, who he seems kind of scared of, and it's kind of gross.
Yeah, he's like, you're a big, strong man. Why don't you open the door? And then he does.
Well, he says, unless you're too scared. And it's like, he's manipulating him, and it's like, it's not good. It's unpleasant.
Which, I mean, to be fair, this doctor is kind of hella manipulative. I mean, he was straight up manipulating Jamie in the last serial.
Loves.
Like, super hardcore. But still, it's unfortunate. And also, I don't know, just like he says, unless you're scared, and then Toberman's like, ugh, and like the doctor like shrinks away, and it's like, that's just gross.
Yeah, but you know what happens afterwards?
We're getting the best thing ever happens. The doors open, because Toberman opens them, and they sort of go in, and like the doctor and Jamie
both
go
reach
to hold,
both reach for Victoria's hand.
And then they wind up holding each other's hands.
And then they shake them off.
Yeah, and then they go to talk to Victoria. Which, I knew a lot of people shipped, like, Two and Jamie. And now I know why. Because they are not at all subtle about it. And from what I've heard, that was not in the script. The director did not know they were going to do it. It was something that that Patrick Troughton and, what's his name, Fraser Hines? Is that it? Whoever the guy that plays Jamie is, they discussed it secretly, and they're like, they'll have to leave it in because we don't do any retakes. Because
we don't have enough money to reshoot anything.
That it'll just stay in.
That is great.
So they just secretly did it, and it got in the show.
I'm not surprised to hear that, because that was a good moment, and it's uncharacteristic for the level of writing in this serial. There are some bits that are, like, okay written, but, like, that was, like, a little bit too sharp for these writers, I feel like. So I totally buy that was theirs.
But they go into the tomb, which is just a room with a bunch of levers.
And Captain and Klieg are being very unsubtle about being the bad guys.
It's like, they're so obvious about it. Like, how does no one notice that they're bad guys?
They're definitely telegraphing it. The whole time.
But there's more than just levers. There's a giant Wheel of Fortune thing.
Oh, yeah.
Above the levers.
And there's doors. The doctor finds a bunch of doors.
Which is like, they're like, there are no doors here. Like, one of the explorers says it. Like, well, we don't know where we're going to go
from
here.
Well, he's like, there's the one big door, which is like that big dial-looking thing.
Isn't that the hatch?
The hatch, right.
The hatch.
And he's like, there's no other doors. And the doctor's like, what the fuck? Yeah,
they're like,
is.
There's a door here and there's a door there. And they're not even, like, hidden doors.
I think they have gigantic Cybermen on it.
They're doors that are very clearly in plain sight. Like, what are you talking about?
Maybe the doctor is just better at recognizing different types of doors.
There's no knobs on these doors. Must not be doors.
And the doctor figures out that the doors are controlled by some sort of symbolic logic system, an OR gate. And it all makes very little sense.
I'm gonna say, I didn't know if any of that was, like, supposed to make any sense.
I think it was supposed to sound like it makes sense, but I don't think it does. I mean, if some listener knows how this all makes sense...
Right, enlighten us. We're happy to learn things.
From what I gathered, the big giant Wheel of Fortune thing had numbers all around it. And, like, that was, like, some code as to how to open the doors and such. But you had to, like, do some math to figure out which levers to switch.
My takeaway was that, yeah, it's some sort of math problem and you can solve...
But you need, like, certain, like, because, like, the doctor will say later, like, you have to use this method and this method.
But, like, the idea is that it's not like, oh, this lever opens the door. It's like, okay, I have to flip this lever, push this button, flip this lever twice.
And this is all part of the genius trap, which is what this tomb is. This tomb is a genius trap. We'll get to that. But the doctor figured it out by using his own special eyes open, mouth shut technique. So we needn't worry our little heads about it.
I have that written down because that's something that my mom used to say to me all the time. Oh, she actually would say it's better to leave your ears open and your mouth shut.
Than your eyes open?
Yeah.
You can close your eyes all you want.
You can close your eyes. Just pay attention.
With your ears.
Hear what other people are talking about. But I don't know. When that line happened, I just went...
I rolled my eyes a little bit because I felt like, oh, then the writers, now you're just trying to get out of explaining this shit that doesn't make any sense. And it's like, I'm not buying it. I don't think you know what it means.
Also, I don't think the doctor's ever closed his mouth in his life.
No, that's definitely not his technique.
He said that line and I was like, that is a lie.
I feel like the system makes sense. It made sense enough to me. Like, I mean, I didn't get the entire specifics of it.
It made sense enough for you to go, okay, yeah. Episode.
All right. Like, there's a code. You break the code and it tells you what levers to switch.
I didn't catch on to the thing about there being a sign with some sort of a guide on it. Like, I thought the logic was just internal to the switches and the dials and the...
Yeah, I think
it had to do with the big circular thing. Yeah, because it had numbers all around it.
If it had to do with the big... Then I can sort of buy that there might be something. Even if it's totally, like, not a real thing in real life, I can buy that it's a thing in the show. But if it's just internal to just, like, a logic-based system that's entirely based around the levers, I don't buy it at all. Oh, the professor... pulls the old let's split up. That's always a good idea.
They say let's split up and the girls will stay here.
And Victoria suggests that they form their own party. And Kaftan reassures the professor that Toberman will guard them. And the professor still insists that Viner should go with them. So Kaftan sends Toberman away. It's all very needlessly complicated.
I just like that you have people from the future. And then you have people you have the woman from the Victoria era who's like, what are you telling me I can't do stuff for?
There is something that kind of bothers me about that, though. It seems like the show wants to...
To make her very...
It wants to be progressive, but is also not at the same time. By being like, having Victoria or whatever be like, I'm
a strong female character.
But she always... does sort of get left behind.
And it's the people from the future are the ones who are not progressive. And it's like, the whole thing seems upside down and not very well thought out.
And it's like, it's progressive in words only, because Victoria is like, I'm progressive, but yeah, I'll stay behind. You know? Like,
right.
She doesn't actually do anything. She's just like, snarky and, you know, whatever, but still
but
frequently
still,
is
okay.
Like the damsel in distress and all that stuff. She does get a few things to do. But for the most part, it's like, yeah, I'll hang out here while you men go do the scary stuff.
Yeah, they're half-assing it. And then there's this very, like, frustratingly stupid moment for Victoria, where she almost climbs into a revitalization sarcophagus. But Viner is like, hey, don't do that. That's like, rule number one of archaeology is don't fucking touch things.
There's this big, like, human-shaped hole in the wall, and she's like, I'm gonna lay in that. That seems like a good idea.
And they're like, don't. And then later we come back and she's like, still trying to get in the damn thing. And she's like, they must be really tall. What the fuck? Stop.
Yeah, she gets in it. It's like, don't do that. And then she gets trapped in it. And she's like, well, what did you expect was going to happen? You walked into a thing that has a door on it. It's going to close. It's Doctor Who.
Oh, can we also say that Victoria said, oh, fiddle. And I loved it. No one says, oh, fiddle. I don't even think people in Victorian era said, oh, fiddle.
I mean, it's an instrument. Jamie and Hayden, they go in a room, and Jamie finds the Cybermat, but he mistakes it for a dead caterpillar.
It's so small!
Caterpillar?
He picks it up, and he's like, I don't know, maybe it has something to do with these caterpillars. He picks it up. the other guy is freaking out about it, and he's like, it's dead. Don't worry about it.
And they are in the room of dramatic lighting, right?
Yeah, they're in the room where stuff is going to happen. Cleeg and Perry, they want to open the hatch thing, but they don't know how to do that.
That's where the math happens. And the doctor's like, well, you got to apply this formula to it.
Yes, he says a bunch of math words and makes it happen.
And the doctor's like, but I wouldn't do that if I were you. And then Cleeg's like, fuck you, I'm going to touch all the levers.
Which he's like, I wouldn't do it. But if you're gonna do it, here's how you would do it.
And he even still kind of, like, fucks it up. The doctor, like, secretly flips the switch. It's like, if you don't want them to do it, why are you letting them do it?
Why are you giving them all of this information?
Yeah, I was really confused by that. First time I watched it, I thought he was trying to sabotage it, but then it worked. And then second time I watched it, I was like, wait, is he trying to help him? Like, why is he doing that?
Because right. He wants to see
if
it.
If the doctor wasn't there, they would not have gotten through the first set of doors.
Yeah, they would not have gotten into the genius trap.
Here's why. The doctor wants the moral high ground, so he's going to be like, don't do this thing. But the doctor also wants to do the thing.
He's the cat.
No, that's bad. Don't do it, but press that button. Just let's see what happens.
That's totally true.
That's just the doctor.
I suppose that is in character for him. That makes sense now. I just didn't get it.
So then Victoria gets shut in the thing.
The trap door. She gets trapped in the thing.
The revital of Mozambique thing.
Yeah, Captain pulls a lever or lever. I've yet to pick between lever and lever. That's where my accent is at. And it closes.
If there are two different ways to say a word, I frequently use both of them, depending on how I feel.
Oh, and then Viner comes in and he's like, did you touch anything? And Captain is like, no, I didn't touch anything.
Why? Do I look evil? Because I'm not.
And then Viner's like, well, keep away from that board. Here, help me. And then Captain is like, oh, one moment. And then she goes right back to the livers. And Viner's like, no. And then they try, in quotes, to open the sarcophagus thingy.
But they need a crowbar, because it's clearly not made out of cardboard.
Cardboard covered in foil.
Hayden is also messing with controls, because everybody's doing it.
And though the wall lights up, and like, Jamie narrates
everything
that's
happening. It's dark now. That wall has lights on it. What? They're moving.
Like, Jamie, we can see that. You don't have to tell us the room got dark. The room got dark.
And Viner is telling Kaftan not to touch the controls still. And he leaves. Because, you know, telling her to not do it and then leaving, I'm sure that's a really good way of getting her to not touch the controls. She touches the controls. The doctor shows up and tells her not to touch the controls. At some point, people have to stop leaving Kaftan alone with the controls.
And the doctor stops her, right? And is able to...
But then he leaves at some point, and she's going to keep touching the controls. That's what's going to happen. People keep leaving her in that room with the controls where she keeps touching the controls. At some point, you have to get Kaftan away from the controls and keep a fucking eye on her. Handcuff her to a radiator.
But they get Victoria out, which is eventually, the important part.
And Jamie and Hayden, there's a swirly on the wall.
And they're getting hypnotized. And they're, like, just testing it out. Like, try it again. Now you do it. Now I'll do it. It's like, they're just testing to see what it does.
And then, Hayden turns it off. And then tells Jamie to mess with the controls while he looks into the obviously dangerous thing.
Which the doctor then has to, like, he's very busy saving companions from doing dumb things. He, like, just got done saving Victoria from stepping inside and then getting stuck in the thing with the door. Then he's running in, and he runs in and he goes, Jamie, don't touch that control. And Jamie goes, I already did.
Like, he said it so casually. I already have.
There's something very Smallville over this episode, or this serial, I guess. It's an idiot plot. Like, everybody's just doing really, really stupid things constantly, and if people just stopped doing stupid things, there wouldn't be a plot. If people had just not done stupid things, this episode would not be happening. Like, they wouldn't have gone in there, they wouldn't have gone down there, like, none of this would be happening if people weren't doing stupid things.
But isn't the point that this stuff wouldn't have happened unless they were geniuses? Isn't that the actual, like, what the plot says it is?
What the episode is saying?
That's what it says it is. And that's what's so weird about it, because it's an idiot plot that entirely rests on the premise that they're geniuses. And it's like, that's like two magnets trying to push them together when they're the same polarity. It just doesn't work.
But they touch the thing. A Cyberman shoots out of the wall.
Yes.
And this is confusing.
There's a close-up shot of a gun.
It shoots Hayden.
Well, I don't, it's not clear at the end of this episode who it shoots.
There's some weird blocking here because there's a Cyberman dummy with a gun. And I think there's a gun at the other end of the room. I'm not sure which gun shoots Hayden.
It's the gun from the wall.
Yeah, it's the gun from the other side of the room. And it's I feel like him. That's supposed to be... Because the next episode starts and they're trying to figure out if that was a cyber... Like, that was a Cyberman and the Cyberman shot him. It's supposed to be kind of ambiguous.
Right. Here's the conversation we have when it happened. Because they, you know, they show it twice because it also opens the next episode. But, like, I was like... That gun's shooting him, but from the camera angle, it seems like it would be from behind him and not from the Cyberman. That's really confusing, because it was the Cyberman who shot him, right? And then they later reveal he was shot in the back. So no, that camera angle was right. It's just the scene was confusing because it wasn't from the Cyberman. It was the gun shooting the target, the fake, the dummy. But yeah, it shoots Hayden, and Hayden is dead. Hayden dies. And that's the end of episode one.
Yeah, and the Darwin Award goes to Hayden. Somebody was going to win it this episode because there are so many idiots. Everybody's just doing stupid shit, and Hayden wins.
And we're now into episode two, which I have titled The Cyber Controller Cometh.
I have titled it Short Nap of the Cybermen.
Short nap.
Viner comes in and he decides to play Ian.
He says the building is alive.
That's true.
Which it's not.
I miss Ian.
So they're examining Hayden's body. The doctor's like, he was shot in the back. And then they show the shot of them all looking at his back.
Where there's nothing.
Where there's nothing. He looks fine.
Why would they show that?
Why wouldn't they just say it and be like, yeah, he's shot in the back, and then not show it? Because they show it, and you very clearly see that there's nothing wrong with his back. But they even do, like, a dramatic sting when it happens. It's like, look at his back! Ta-da!
Well, it's black and white. Nobody's gonna notice. It'll air once. Who cares? Nobody will see this again.
We'll probably junk it in a couple years.
But the doctor kind of recreates the lever sequence.
He's like, everybody get in the corner. Jamie, do the thing. And then Jamie does the thing.
Because everybody, if you guys, what I'm asking you to do is dangerous. So if you want to leave, leave. Jamie tries to leave and he goes, not you. He pushes him back. And he's like, no, you stay here.
You're the one who's going to do the dangerous thing.
Can I say, I love Jamie so much. She's absolutely adorable. I think he's slowly pulling up in my all-time favorite companions list.
Really?
Yeah, I like him. He's funny.
He is really funny. I do like him a lot. But they redo the thing, and what it is like the Cyberman comes out of the wall, the gun comes from the other side, and shoots him.
And the head comes off.
And explodes.
Because they say it's supposed to be like a weapons testing room, but I don't really understand why the weapons testing room needs a hypnotizing wall, unless they're testing a hypno weapon.
That was very unclear to me as well. And my explanation is...
Very similar to clear? The explanation yes. given in the episode.
Which is?
It's a target. It's a thing that hurts with stuff. They do mention the word target, and it doesn't seem to make sense in the context where of what they're saying. And then the word target comes up again when they're talking in a context where it does make sense, and they're not talking about the thing, and it's just really weird.
Like, it makes sense of the Cyberman dummy being the target that the weapon shoots, because it's a dummy that you shoot with a weapon. But the hypno wall makes no goddamn sense, and is also not relevant at all.
It doesn't come back either.
After the second guy dies, everyone's trying to decide if this is too dangerous. Right. And I think one of the people in charge says, yeah, this mission's too dangerous. First chance we get, we're going back on the ship. You know, we don't have enough people to deal with, like, what's going on here. We don't have enough supplies. We'll kind of regroup and see about coming back when we're more prepared. The ship was sabotaged, I think. And it's going to take them a while. It's going to take, like, a couple days to get it repaired. And everyone's trying to figure out what they're going to do in the meantime.
Because it's
going
to take 3 days to fix.
And the doctor's also trying to figure it out. And somebody goes, can't you just leave? And the doctor goes, oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I could just leave.
Yeah, I want to talk before they leave the room.
Victoria thinks the Cybermat is a fossil.
Yeah.
And she puts it in her purse.
After the doctor tells her twice, like, hey, put that down.
Because the doctor identifies it in some sort of book. He says, it's a Cybermat. She goes, what's a Cybermat? And he points in the book and he says, it's one of those. I'd leave it alone if I were you. And then she puts it in her bag.
Victoria, I like you. don't be Ben.
Right. Make better choices.
Twice now, people have said, hey, don't do this dangerous thing. This stupid dangerous thing. And she's done the stupid dangerous thing twice.
And it leads to negative consequences.
And then the professor has decided to abort the mission. Actually reasonable. Viner agrees. Captain and Klieg do not.
Because they want to have their secret evil agenda.
They're very, very, very secret. Not secret at all. Very secret agenda. Captain Hopper comes in.
Captain America.
He says, some character has fucked up the fuel pumps. And then there's a little minor disagreement between the Doctor and Hopper about whether it's a who or a what.
He keeps saying somebody, and he's like, don't you mean something?
He's like, no, it's a fucking person, all right? And he's like, and I'm gonna guard the ship so because I don't want anybody else fucking with things. And then he says, like, this really weird thing about keeping his skin tight. I don't know, it was a weird fucking line.
I'm gonna get off this planet with my skin still fitting tight all over, all right?
That is the weirdest way to word anything.
It's so unsettling.
Well, I think he's talking about how the Cybermen take your skin off.
Do they?
I guess they gotta take your skin off if they're gonna scoop your organs out.
And put you inside a metal suit.
But he doesn't think it's the Cybermen, though. He thinks it's someone else. So.
Yeah, it's a very specific, very bizarre thing to
say. Why not just say, I don't want to be deaded?
The writers are trying to think of a very American way to put it.
That is not one.
Well, of course not. They're trying to write him like a fucking cowboy or something. And they're like, cowboys talk like this in the Westerns. I'm going to get off this place with my skin still fitting tight all over, all right? There's definitely an attempt to write an American space hero guy.
There's no way anyone in the world can say that. And pull it off.
I'm gonna get off this place with my skin still fitting tight all over, all right? Yeah, Captain Kirk wouldn't.
Part of the problem of it is that all over, all right. Just the, nah.
All over, all right.
Also, you could still be dead.
What if you just got your skin loosened a little bit? You're fine.
If you die and your skin's fine.
And then Klieg pushes the agenda of checking out the hatch. Since they'll be stuck on the planet anyway, might as well take the opportunity to go down where the danger is.
And this is where the Doctor's like, no, that's a bad idea.
And the Professor is like, let's go down the hatch. Even though the Professor just a moment ago was like, it's too dangerous, we should abort. And now the Professor is like, sure. Since we're gonna be here anyway, we might as well.
Might as well risk danger.
Again, there's literally zero way for us to get off this planet. Doctors.
Let's go where the Cybermen are. Seems like a good idea.
Although I say that, and it's if he took any of them, they would be companions, because the Doctor still cannot control his TARDIS. It's not like he could, like, take them back to Earth or something.
I've always wanted to see the Doctor travel with a large group of people.
Not this group of people, though.
Yeah, no, not this bunch of idiot geniuses. Isn't this when the Doctor has a slightly weird moment with Toberman? Something about strong hands and being let loose in the right place. It was awkward.
I think he was trying to imply that he might have been the one who damaged the rocket. It was a really awkward scene.
It was creepy. And this is when Klieg tries to show off his logic skills on the controls, and the Doctor messes with them behind his back, and the hatch opens.
Sneakily fixes it.
And then they're all talking about who's going to go down. And again, we get the women should stay up here bullshit. And Victoria's like, I'm going down no matter what. And then and again, that's cool. But then the Doctor's like, no, you stay up here and keep an eye on Captain.
Because she's clearly the villain. Not in those words.
Yeah, I don't even think he says her name. He just sort of like, look.
Yeah, he indicates that somebody should keep an eye on her. And the Doctor won't go down the hatch without Toberman.
Oh, yeah, because this is the point where he's like someone's like, I should go down there or whatever. And he's like, no, we should send somebody, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, let's send the expendable guy who's fucking Toberman. And it's like, awkward and terrible.
Well, what he said was, I'll go down, but I'm not going down alone. I'm going with Toberman.
Yeah, because he's like, somebody's like, I'll go with you. Maybe it was Jamie. And then he's like, no, I want it to be Toberman. And it's just like,
yeah, it seems like he's saying that this guy's expendable. And it's like, yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily what he's getting at, but it feels like it is, and it's...
Even if it's not the Doctor saying it, it seems like it's the writer saying it.
I was gonna say, I felt like it was the Doctor trying to split them up, but it was definitely the show being like,
we can't hurt Jamie, we can hurt Toberman, because
not an important character.
It just didn't work.
Like I said, this is the second serial in a row we've had. Kimmel, though, at least had some...
Had characterization.
Had decent points, and he worked in some scenes. The problem was he started off terrible, and they ended him terrible by killing him for no goddamn reason. And like, but this one is just pretty much awkward throughout.
There isn't really a moment where he's fully turned into a character. There's a point where he becomes a hero, but he dies a hero. Spoiler alert. I mean, people have seen it.
But anyway, they go down. Victoria and Kaftan do not, and they proceed to eat food.
Well, Kaftan has food in form of cubes, and Victoria doesn't want any cubes. So she takes her eyes off Kaftan, which the thing that she's there to do is keep an eye on Kaftan. And when she's like, I don't want any cubes, she takes her eyes off Kaftan and looks toward the hatch. And that's when Kaftan roofies her drink. And down the hatch, there's a big freezer full of Cybermen in suspended animation.
Which is very clearly like a model. It looks tiny.
And Klieg likens it to a honeycomb. Which makes no sense. He's a logician.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a honeycomb.
When they do the close-ups...
It looks cool.
Yeah, like when it's like three stories instead of like this five, it's five or six or whatever it's supposed to be. But when they do the close-ups, it actually does look pretty impressive. Even though it's clear that it's not ice that they're breaking out of, just like cellophane.
Cellophane?
But,
Oh, is it supposed to be ice?
Wasn't it supposed to be like a plastic covering of some sort, but with like... The whole thing goes cold. I don't think it was ice that they were breaking through.
But like it seals back up later when things are freezing. So I think it's supposed to. I don't know.
Because I mean, it's clearly some sort of a membrane, and it's not a solid that turns into a liquid. It's an elastic membrane.
It's some kind of like pod thing.
I don't think that was supposed to be ice. Because if that was supposed to be ice, then they really messed up here. Because that did not in any way resemble ice. And Victoria falls asleep because she's been roofied.
She drinks her coffee and she's like, oh, I'm tired. And then just goes,
like, no, that does not translate to a podcast.
I don't know what, like, it's so sudden.
Yeah, she's like awake and then boom. Immediately just...
Her head just drops?
Well, she has been drugged. And we don't know what the drug is. Some drugs might function that. It's future drugs.
Okay.
Drugs from the future. Future roofies. And then Viner panics instantly. Where's Viner at this point? Is he down in the hatch and or...
Yeah, he's down in the hatch, I'm pretty sure. Because he's like, we need to get out of here, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because the hatch is closed. He panics about that.
Captain shuts the hatch after Victoria passes out because there's nobody to watch her.
And Viner's role is to panic, so he panics. And the doctor notes that Klieg doesn't seem worried, because duh, he's the bad guy. Like, it's not even a little bit subtle. It's like, he's not worried because he's the bad guy. And he's like, oh, I'm just gonna mess with these controls. They'll open the door.
And then a theme of this serial starts to happen, which is, okay, so they start unfreezing the Cybermen, but then the doctor freezes him back, and then it gets unfrozen again. It goes back and forth. This happens multiple times with that, with the opening and closing of the hatch. It seems like this happens a lot, like to kill time, of just someone being like, open the thing! And then someone else like, no, close the thing! No, open the thing! No, freeze the thing. No, unfreeze the thing. Just get on with the story. We just watched a 7-parter, and I felt like it had better pacing than this 4-parter.
Sometimes that happens, because this 4-parter is not well-paced. It's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of ping-pong plot.
So Klieg unfreezes him, but then like Viner's like, no, we gotta refreeze him. And then he's like going to do that, and Viner gets shot by Klieg. Klieg shoots him. And then he's like, screw you, I'm unfreezing these cybersickles.
When it's thawing, the Cybermen start moving, and then the professor is like, this is great, we're a great archaeologist, we found a thing, but the Cybermen are clearly moving, and he's acting like they're not. Viner, after that, notices that they're moving. And the pacing of that moment is completely just, it didn't match up.
The pacing at the end of this is terrible in general, because it should just be the Cybermen bust out, and you end your fucking episode. It drags so long. It takes them so long to get unfrozen.
We watch them freaking crawl, break through the cellophane, crawl out of the thing in like 4 different shots. Like, it happens, we cut away, something else happens, we cut back, they're still crawling out of the thing, we cut away, we cut back, they're a little bit farther out.
And they were already moving when the professor was excited about it. The professor, not Klieg. the professor was excited about it when they were moving. And it's just, it's a weird moment because I'm pretty sure the way it's intended is that they're not supposed to be able to see them moving yet. So it's like the shots are in the wrong order or something. There's something not right here with the editing. I'm surprised at how Viner manages to pull the right levers to make the freezer come back on. Because he seems to just pull some random levers. And this is a logic-based system we've established already. Like, is Viner a lot smarter than Klieg? Because he just fucking looks at it and just pulls some things and then it works. It does exactly the thing that he wants it to do.
Maybe it's the exact same movement to freeze it as it is to unfreeze it. And he just saw what happened the first time.
Repeating what he saw.
He's just doing the same thing backwards. But, I mean, nobody was paying attention to what Klieg was doing.
I'm not going to fault the episode for this because the plot needs to move forward. But it doesn't. It doesn't make sense. But even still, though, the plot's not moving forward because that's just stalling. That's all it is. It's stalling and getting rid of a unnecessary character. But the doctor's like, let's go along with it. He's like, yeah, unfreeze it. He wants to know what Klieg is up to.
Yes. Which
is he wants power. Surprise.
Mm. But again, this is another example of like the major force in moving this plot forward is the doctor.
The doctor could be like, hey, don't do that. But instead he's like, no.
Let's see where this is going.
The Cyberman. Let's see what you're up to.
Well, I mean, he has a gun.
That's true. But he doesn't have to go along with it necessarily.
Well, what else is he going to do? Get shots?
Try to stop him. Talk him out of it.
That is what he should do.
Instead, he's like, I just want to see where this is going.
I don't think that's what he's doing. I think what he's doing is being chicken. The guy has a gun and he's basically going, well, I can't do anything. He's being overpowered in a way that the doctor now wouldn't. The doctor now would be like, hey, I have a sonic screwdriver. I can take your gun apart.
But basically what we find out is that Klieg wants to, you know, rule the Cybermen.
Yeah, and he pats himself on the back like, I'm the best.
I am freeing them, so they'll love me.
He's really, really dumb.
The Cybermen start busting out. And this is like when we start cutting back. Again, it takes them forever. But we go back to Victoria.
She wakes up and starts asking questions. Captain also decides to stop even trying to be subtle. She has a gun. She gives a Bond villain speech or something. While the Cybermat comes out of Victoria's bag.
Right.
And Victoria's like, the thing behind you, look! And she's like, how dumb do you think I am? Do you really think I'm gonna fall for that? No, seriously, the thing behind you, please look. And then she gets bit by the thing behind her.
She gets bit by the Cybermat. Victoria gets a badass moment.
She takes the gun and shoots the Cybermat.
Way to go, Victoria.
And the Cybermen are waking up again. That was the short nap of the Cybermen. That's what this episode part is named after, is short nap of the Cybermen that they just took. Because they woke up and then they went back to sleep and then they woke up again. I guess it could be the snooze button of the Cybermen. And now they come climbing out of their blister packs as the soundtrack transitions into the familiar Cybermen theme from the moon base.
Or this might be the 10th planet. So I'm assuming just like the expedition and the doctor and all that are just sort of sitting around watching them as they like go and they open this like big door on the front of the, like at the very bottom of the base of the honeycomb. They open it and the cyber controller comes out with his giant penis head.
It's a stupid, stupid head.
It's a bubble with veins drawn on it in Sharpie.
It's the worst.
It's bullet shaped. Again, it does kind of look penis-y.
So much.
I don't know what penises you have encountered that look like that.
I told you it's pointy at the top.
Well, I mean, other than it's pointy, I mean, it's a bullet
shaped. Other than the way that it's shaped,
and
it
the lip,
totally
it has
like a penis.
It has like a lip. So it's slightly penis-y. But anyway, he's giant.
You're penis obsessed.
He's a gigantic Cyberman. He's the cyber controller.
Well, he's not really gigantic. He's about the same size as the other Cybermen, except he has like a hat.
Well, the actor who plays him is like 6'2".
Yeah, he's a bit taller, but he's not gigantic. I mean, we've seen a gigantic Cyberman.
Right.
He's not gigantic, but he's big. He's tall. He's taller than the rest, is what I'm saying.
Taller than your average Cyberman.
Yeah.
He's an above average Cyberman.
Attack of the above average Cyberman.
Is this the first appearance of the Cyber Controller?
Yes. Yeah.
And the Cyberman, too.
And he has cake all over his face. His face is covered in cake.
It's ice.
No, it's cake. That is not ice. That is cake. And then Klieg introduces himself to it. He's like, hey, I did this. Aren't I great? And the Cyber Controller is like, dude, I own you.
You belong to us. And I feel like they've changed the voice of
the
Cybermen
and it's
again.
Way harder to hear.
I believe the voice now is done with an electrolarynx, which is one of those things that you push against your throat and it like buzzes, so you form the words with your mouth.
We had to turn subtitles on.
That it's the hardest to understand of any of the Cybermen.
Yeah, it is a little bit hard to follow sometimes. He speaks very slowly. And electrolarynx is one of those things that people who have smoked a lot and had their esophagus or their larynx, I guess, removed, and they can't speak, so they use a thing that they push against the throat. That's, I believe, what they're using. It also sounds like a talk box, but I don't know that talk boxes were commonplace. I mean, there were a few like early machines that were kind of like I think one of them was called a sonovox. That where you can basically play an instrument and you push it against your throat and you make shapes with your mouth and it basically makes the sound of the instrument come out of your mouth. And there's also the talk box, which is, I think, came later, which is it's a speaker in a box with a tube that you put in your mouth and you play your instrument out of the speaker and it goes through the tube into your mouth and it comes out of your mouth into your microphone. And that's something that like was popular in the 80s, but I don't believe that that's what this is. I believe this is an electrolarynx, but it sounds a lot like a talk box because it's basically the same thing of like you send sounds into your mouth instead of using your vocal cords. And then you use your mouth to form the words.
But I still feel like it's the least understandable of the Cybermen that we've had so far. I can see maybe not wanting to use the 10th Planet one because it sounds kind of similar to the Daleks.
The modern Cybermen are kind of similar to the Daleks as well because it's a ring modulator and a pitch shifter. It's just the ring modulator is set differently and there's a pitch shifter, and that's the difference from the Daleks. The Daleks are just a ring modulator and a distortion, I guess.
I don't entirely remember how they sounded in the moon base, but I feel like I understood them better than I do in this serial. Like, there was times I was like, I have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah, there were times where it was hard to follow. I think I followed most of it.
It was okay when they were speaking slowly, but whenever they would start to speak a little bit faster.
And sometimes they just make noises. When they're struggling, they're like, and sometimes it sounds almost like a mouth harp or something. Which goes,
I was reading earlier that apparently that was a criticism that the serial got, is that the noises they made sometimes sounded silly. But anyway, that is the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I have titled as Attack of the Cybermats.
Mine is The Trouble with Cybermats, which is a Star Trek reference.
And then this is when we learn that, yeah, it's the genius trap. That they were wanting smart people to unleash them so that they could have smart brains for their cyber, you know, situation.
It seems like a very strange plan because the only people who are going to fall for it are stupid people, but the only people who are going to be able to figure it out are intelligent people. So what you need is this perfect storm of really stupid Klieg and really intelligent doctor. That's the only way you're going
to
get in.
Meanwhile, upstairs, Victoria has called in the Americans to help.
Yeah, Captain Hopper and Callum is the new guy.
And they're both like, no, little lady.
Vic. They call her Vic.
They keep calling her Vic, even though she says, don't call me Vic.
Callum starts it. He starts calling her Vic, and she doesn't like it, so Hopper starts doing it too.
Because they are dicks. Americans are dicks.
Yeah, Americans don't listen to people. They just like to talk. I can say that because I'm not American. I'm racist. That's not even how it works.
And meanwhile, Captain is pretending to be knocked out because she's waiting for an opportune moment to strike.
The Cybermen talk about surviving and recap the moon base.
And then they ask the doctor for help. Like, you are going to help us.
Yeah, the Cybermen intend to turn the humans into Cybermen. Jamie runs into what looks like, but probably isn't, a conveniently placed labyrinth, and he gets zapped. Was that a labyrinth just randomly, or were those just a bunch of things standing around?
I think it was just a bunch of things standing around. I don't know.
Okay, because when I first looked at it, I was sure that he ran into a labyrinth, and I was like, why is there a labyrinth down here? Then second time, I was like, no, that just looks like a labyrinth because of the way things are placed and the way he's hiding behind stuff. And he gets zapped.
Which is the first instance of squiggly lines.
Toberman gets thrown, and it looks like one of those things where it's like somebody gets thrown and then they're dead, which sometimes happens in these old things where it's like somebody gets thrown and then they're randomly dead, but he's not dead, but we're not sure at this point.
I would also like to say when Toberman gets thrown, like he gets picked up by a Cyberman, lifted over the Cyberman's head, and you can clearly see the hook on the back of Toberman and the wire that is holding him up. so that the Cyberman can lift him up because he's on wires. But you can see the entire rig as he's being picked up.
Well, that's nothing compared to what you can see when Toberman lifts the Cyberman up later.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the Cyber Controller who says, struggle is futile. They're almost there.
Gonna make it. One day.
Yeah, one day they're gonna figure out that catchphrase. Oh, by the way, the first line of this episode, that was the last line of the previous episode, it's different. You can hear the pitch of the voice has gone up. Because in the previous episode, and then, so it's, it moved up. They probably figured out that maybe we should make it a little bit more clear what they're saying.
I had a harder time hearing what they were saying in this episode, truthfully.
Me too, but, you know, they were trying something. Maybe they just forgot which position the pitch control was in.
That sounds most likely.
Larry knocked it down, accidentally knocked it down a couple of notches.
Well, up.
But then Captain wakes up, pulls a gun on the Americans, and holds them up.
Yeah, because someone forgot to keep an eye on the gun. Again, people should be keeping an eye on these things. It's not that difficult to keep an eye on things.
And then something kind of happens that happens a lot in Classic Who, but with a twist that I kind of enjoy, which is that Victoria screams, but it's a distraction so that they can, like, knock the gun out of her hand and stuff.
Well, it's a callback, because earlier she was screaming at the Cybermat that was attacking and she didn't believe her, and now she screams at the Cybermat that isn't attacking, it's dead, but she's screaming at it in order to fool Captain, and Captain falls for it, because last time, it got her. That was probably the smartest moment in this serial, other than the holding hands bit.
I like that a lot, because, like, generally, you just have screaming for it just because everyone's scared. But this is like, this was screaming as a tactic.
It was a tactical move. It was a strategy thing. And it was smart. And it worked. And it was a callback to earlier.
And so the Americans open the hatch. I think they, like, pulled up the thing to see the wires.
Yeah, they figured it out instead of figuring out by logic.
They're like, hey, this wire goes here.
Yeah, they're like, it has to be this set of wires because that's what's hooked up to the mechanism that opens the hatch.
Which is one way to figure out the genius trap, I guess.
Which I like. They just take the whole logical problem and look at it mechanically and figure it out that way. Logic be damned.
Well, they're Americans. When Hopper opens the hatch and looks down, as he says, it's very quiet down there. Or maybe Victoria says that. And somebody else says, yeah, too quiet.
And I said, oh, too Raph.
A little too Raph.
I said, look, it's Raph. A little too Raph.
We made the same joke.
Yep. Because that's the one good line in Secret of the Ooze. No, there's one other good line. Somebody says something like, what were you doing on the roof? And Master Splinter says, coming to a conclusion, or something like that. There's a long, awkward pause between coming and the rest of the sentence, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing, Kevin Clash?
But Hopper goes down with Smoke Bomb.
Victoria wants to go too, but the rules are clear. Victoria never gets to go where the danger is. She only gets to stay where the danger is. Those are the Victoria rules, and they apply all the time to Victoria. Don't go where the danger is. Stay where the danger is.
There's danger everywhere. Just go where you want, Victoria.
No, she has to stay where the danger is and keep an eye on it.
Poorly.
The Cybermen appreciate the Klieg-like logic.
And they're gonna, like, yeah, you're gonna be our leader.
Yeah, but not before he's altered. And that's a big surprise to him, because he's a fucking dumbass who doesn't know the first thing about how Cybermen operate in spite of apparently being their biggest fan.
While this is all happening, everybody's sort of huddled around. Jamie appears to be giving a massage to Toberman, just in the background.
I did not notice that.
Because, like, Toberman's been knocked out, you know, he's got thrown. And, like, he's sort of, like, almost in Jamie's lap, sort of still kind of shaking off the attack. But, like, Jamie is, like, massaging him! And I was like, that is adorable. I love Jamie. I mean, I don't know how a massage helps, but hey.
It's something. Just as the Cybermen prepare to put Klieg and Perry in the freezer, Hopper throws the smoke bomb and leads an escape. The Cybermen decide to pick on Toberman, and they zap him in the head. Squiggly lines, and they're like, he is strong, we will use him.
They all climb up, and then we have, again, like, it's that hatch opens and closed so many goddamn times.
They get out, and they close the hatch, and the Cybermen men are, like, beating on the hatch.
Well, they grab onto the doctor first, and Victoria hits the Cybermen with a thing.
What is that thing?
I don't know. Some kind of thing.
And then they grab her, and then they, like, she gets free, and then the hatch starts closing, and he's like, oh, no! And it very slowly closes on him.
Super slowly, and he's like, ah!
Yeah, and he sounds like a mouth harp. Like an electronic version of a mouth harp.
But they're banging on the hatch, and the hatch is, like, coming apart as they're banging on it, and they're like, see, it's closed, it's fine, and there are like almost holes in the cardboard that is the hatch.
The Cyberman gives up on trying to get through the door, and Klieg comes out the hatch soon thereafter.
We should save the rest of the people that are down there, even though they be dicks.
Yeah, Klieg wants to bargain with the Cybermen because he's a moron. And the Cybermen release bigger Cybermats.
Plus-sized.
And Captain and Klieg decide to use the Cyberman dummy Chekhov's gun against the Cybermen.
Yeah, Why were they in that room? Were they, like, put in there by everybody else because, like, you guys are assholes?
Didn't they go there to get the gun?
Yeah, they went there to get the gun. No one's looking at... No one's like, hey, we're gonna lock you in here because we can't trust you. No.
Well, because from what, like, I remember, they were just in there, and then one of them was like, hey, wait a second, that thing has a gun on it.
No, I remember it as they were not in that room when they decided to do that. They decided to do that in the main room, and then they went there to get the gun. And they get it. Klieg calls it a small X-ray laser. Listeners, is that even almost a thing?
I submit to you that it is not.
As far as I know, X-rays and lasers have nothing to do with each other. I might be wrong, but I think X-rays are like, that's radiation. Laser, that's amplified light. I mean, light is also, you know, radiation, whatever, but it's not the same.
And then Klieg is all like, she shoots a fireball out of the thing. And then is immediately like, well, I have all of the power now. I can take out the Cybermen myself.
One single solitary gun. And he's like, yep, I tried to do it before without a gun. That was my bad. Now I have a single gun, which the Cybermen probably have none of, because it's just their technology that I found laying around their base. Now that I have this single gun, I have all the power over them. I'm gonna try it again, and it'll go fine this time.
It's like, but first, I'm gonna take out the doctor.
And this is a tomb. Why is there even a weapons testing room in a tomb?
I think it's a Cyberman city that has a tomb in it.
A tomb in it?
But the Cybermen are still, like, working on altering Toberman, and things aren't going 100% okay. Like, he still has fear. They send up the Cybermats. They're like, we're going to send them up through some tube, I guess, because there's some way to get out of there that's not through the hatch. That the Cyberman can't get through, but the Cybermats can.
They're small enough.
I guess it might be the ventilation system or something like that. That's usually what it is.
Why do the Cybermen need ventilation? Like, can't they just do that in their suits? Aren't they just fucking robots? Why do they need, like, air conditioning?
I think they have organs in there.
Maybe it's the heat-sucking out system for the freezer.
All right, that'll buy.
And while everyone sleeps, there's a scene with Victoria and the doctor talking about loss and memory, and I think this scene might have been added later.
But it's also probably the best scene of the entire serial, of each of the four episodes.
It's sweet with a little hint of unsettling. There's a little bit of a creepy factor in that scene, but there's mostly sweet.
I feel like maybe not so much creepy as just, like, you can tell, like, the doctor's running away from stuff. Because she's like, I miss my dad, because, you know, he's dead. That happened yesterday. And he's like, you'll forget your family, because you'll fill your life full of other fun things, you know? Adventures and stuff. Which she's... A, trying to comfort her, but B, it also is just like, dude, you had some serious problems with your family, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's clearly talking about himself. And he pretty much says that, too, when he starts talking about his own family and how he can remember them when he chooses to.
But most of the time, he just does not think about them.
Which, yeah, that's like, wow, man.
After that, there's this great line about, nobody in the universe can do what we're doing now. I've pulled that quote before for promos for the show.
It's a good line.
It's a very nice, descriptive thing of what the show is.
And then Callum gets attacked by a Cybermat. Oh, there's lots of them. Callum uses gun. The doctor uses cables. It is very effective.
Yeah, he just makes a barrier that shoots out. I don't know. Was it like, is it like an EMP sort of situation?
Basically. I mean, he doesn't use those words, but he's like, it sent out electricity that made him confused. So yes.
Yeah, and he makes a complete metal breakdown joke and it falls completely flat.
And Jamie goes, ooh.
And then he's like, I'm sorry. I love that moment so much.
Of course you do, Joe. That is a you moment.
He made a terrible pun. He got called out on it, and he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. It's adorable!
That's what Joe lives for.
Yeah, that's what Joe is.
Guys, I love puns.
It's not even a pun. It's a malapropism. That's when you replace a word with a similar word. Puns use words that are... You don't replace the word. It just has double meanings.
Well, I enjoy plays on words. How's that?
That is fair.
One of my favorite New Who scenes is the fucking master race joke. It's so stupid, and I love it.
That is a pun, because that's using the double meaning of master. It's not using the double meaning of race, because that would have been different if it was a master race where everyone's trying to get there first.
It's just the master racing himself. Then things sort of calm down, and then...
Captain and Klieg enter with the Cyberman gun, and it goes off.
And you hear Jamie go, look out, Doctor! And then he shoots, and you're like, oh no, the Doctor's been shot! And that's the end of episode 3. And now we get to episode 4, which I've got as control of the controller.
I've got it as open and shut.
Okay, so it starts with him shooting, but like it just shows him holding the gun there forever for the title to do its thing before he shoots. And then we pull back and like, oh, he shot some other guy that was in the way.
He shot Callum in the shoulder, the American.
Like, that's a cop-out.
I think Callum is not dead?
No, he's not dead.
Does he have anything else to do after this?
No. But I don't think he's dead because like, they go to help him.
Yeah, but does he survive?
Who cares?
Yeah, he's Callum. Who gives a shit? His entire personality is he started the Vic meme. That's his entire personality. He started it, and then the other guy picked it up, so we don't need him anymore.
I do have to say it was hard not... I don't know. I immediately wanted to start calling her Vicky. I'm like, no, we've had Vicky. This is Victoria. She's a completely different companion.
And I've been thinking about that, too, of like, why would you name the character Victoria when you've already had a Vicky just a couple of companions ago?
And then also, we mentioned this in the last podcast, her name is Victoria, and she comes from the Victorian era. Little on the nose.
That did not occur to me.
Really?
It did not occur to me.
We pretty much assumed, like, we need the name for this woman from the Victorian era. Victoria! Nailed it.
That'll work.
Klieg's basically like, I'm gonna go bargain with the Cybermen. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, he opens the hatch and he yells, hey, Cyber Controller, what up?
Hey!
Can we have a cyber chat?
You up? Want a cyber? What you wearing?
Now we've got Cyber Toberman.
Yeah, he sits up and he is under mind control. And the Cyber Controller and Toberman come up the hatch to find Klieg with a gun. And Klieg asserts dominance. He demands the release of Toberman. And something happens with the squiggly lines. And then Toberman steps forward. But he's obviously still under mind control. Obviously still under mind control. And Jamie notes it. He goes, there's something weird about that guy. And the doctor's like, yeah, there's something weird. And we're all going, he's still under mind control.
And they do nothing about it.
And the logicians don't notice it. Should we address the logicians thing yet, by the way?
Go for it.
Because the Brotherhood of Logicians are what Klieg and Kaftan are part of.
I thought they said magicians.
No, it's the Brotherhood of Logicians. They believe in the value of logic, but are terrible at it. That's basically who they are.
I swear to God, I thought they said magicians, and I was like, that is a big-ass twist. I did not see that coming.
They're not magicians, they're logicians. They're just really, really bad logicians.
They're even worse magicians.
They keep getting that gun without anyone noticing, so...
That's true. Oh... Okay, magician. That makes more sense. That makes way more sense.
You got that just now? I thought it was like, oh, you thought it was, but then you realized, but you realize now that they're logicians.
I realize now that they're logicians. I just sort of went with it. I was like, all right, they're magicians, and they want to conquer the Earth. Which, by the way, he wants to conquer the Earth.
No, they're logicians. That's why they're wanting to get to the Cybermen, because the Cybermen are logic-based, supposedly...
hey, let's move on.
So much more of the episode makes sense now?
Yeah.
Klieg wants to conquer the Earth. Yep. The cyber controller agrees to give him some of their power devices. They don't specify, we will give you some of our power devices. It's like, power devices?
What does that mean?
Just tub them out specific. And they just get a fuck ton of batteries.
Some sort of devices to grab power?
That would be hilarious if they just dumped a shit ton of batteries.
These are our power devices. It's just a bunch of fucking power supplies. Just power adapters.
Klieg's just like, yeah, sounds great. Give me them power devices.
Yeah, and in return, you can use the revitalization sarcophagus thingy thing. And Klieg also locks the Dr. Jamie and Professor in that room. The room with the revitalization sarcophagus in it.
And takes Victoria hostage, because that's her role.
And the cyber controller voice is going wavy.
And the hatch is closed now, by the way. I just want to keep you guys updated on the status of the hatch.
And the controller jumps in the sarcophagus.
No. He's slowly ambling towards the sarcophagus, because he's running low on energy. And the doctor's like, I think we should help him. I think we should help him into the sarcophagus.
Into the revitalization chamber thingy-ma-doo-dad.
Are you crazy? Literally, I think he says, are you out of your mind? And he's like, no, this is a good plan. Go with me on it.
Yeah, and then when he's in there, he's like, yeah, but isn't it better that he's in there than out here? And maybe we should make sure that he stays in there.
But also maybe don't turn the fucking thing on.
Who turned it on?
I think it just maybe auto... I think he says it's like, oh, it's doing it... Like, automatically. Like, that's part of its setup.
Like, a cyber...
And we have to turn it off, but he doesn't turn it off in time.
And Victoria tells the logicians that there's another gun in another room.
Which is not true, right?
No.
It doesn't really matter. She just wants them to leave the room, I think. And they're not sure what to do about that.
Klieg says something. I don't remember, but there's the word Cyberman and arousal.
Says something about in case we arouse the Cyberman.
Yeah, I think we have aroused the Cybermen, or something like that. That's going to be a gif, because it's going to be great out of context. Keep an eye out.
Well, that have already happened.
That's true. This will be after the gifs. Did you guys like that gif?
Okay, but Jamie has tied a rope around the chamber dealy.
Flimsy ropes. The cyber controller punches his way out through the cardboard and foil.
And the doctor's like, Jamie, I'm going to have to teach you how to tie knots. The rope was not the goddamn problem.
He punched his way out of the chamber. The rope had nothing. The rope had no hope.
Like, he kind of went around the rope. Like, the rope didn't break.
The rope was a non-issue.
The rope doesn't even come into it.
When we were watching it, the scene happened. And then, like, a scene later, Joe went, oh, yeah. And he's like, I forgot to make that joke. But it was like,
that's
going to
be another gif, you guys. It's the Cyberman busting down. It's just going to say, oh, yeah.
It was like 5 to 10 minutes later that you said it.
Because it took me a while to think of that.
Well, I'm Swedish, so I wouldn't have thought of it.
But you know about the Kool-Aid man, right?
I'm aware. It's just not a big part of my life. I've never had Kool-Aid.
We worship the Kool-Aid man in America. He's a minor deity.
The cyber controller Wi-Fi's Toberman into doing violence at Klieg.
Like, does Toberman kill Klieg?
No. He hits him and he goes down. I don't think he dies, because I think he has more stuff to do later. The controller re-enters the room. Kaftan says, but you promised. And the controller's like, psych, promises are for losers. Cybermen don't play that shit. The controller tells Kaftan to open the hatch. She doesn't. So the controller does and walks to the door. But she closes before the controller gets there and shoots the controller. Putting the hatch controls that far from the hatch was a poor design choice. But Kaftan's gun is useless against the cyber controller, so the cyber controller just shoots her right back with the better gun.
Right, because they have guns.
Yeah, and then she starts smoking. I mean, she doesn't, like, light up a cigarette. Smoke comes out of her. And then she lies down, then moves to get into a more comfy position to be dead in.
And then the doctor talks to Toberman.
Yeah, he says, like, you're not like them. You're a man like us. You must help us.
You're human. Fight it.
Which, again... maybe kind of has racist under overtones.
On the one hand, he's saying you're like us, but on the other hand, he's manipulating him. So it's like, it's this double-sided, weird, awkward moment where it's like, not quite a good thing.
I mean, he's just trying to get him to fight his mind control.
That's true.
If it wasn't for everything else.
If it wasn't for the entirety of this racial stereotype, we might be okay, but we're not.
I mean, I just don't think it's fair to say it's manipulation until later, and then it's totally fair.
But I mean, the way he tells him, it's also, I don't know.
Gross.
It's gross, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the tone of it.
Fight your being what you are right now. Be like us. I don't know, there's just weirdness about it. It makes me uncomfortable.
And then Toberman hits the cyber controller, then moves out of frame and lifts up a very obvious dummy of the cyber controller and throws it.
That was so ridiculous. First of all, it's a man made out of metal, and he just lifts it over his head and tosses it like a rag doll. Because it's a rag doll.
You couldn't make it stiffer? You can make it hollow and still, like, solid.
You can roll up bits of a thicker foam and have, like, each part of the arm be, like, one roll of foam, and then it will bend at the right parts. And you can even put in hard things to represent bones and just attach them with little bits of wire or rope or something. Like, there are ways of making a dummy move kind of like a collapsed person would.
But they opted not to do that.
Yeah, it's just, like, stuffed with socks.
He gets thrown into, like, the levers, right? And sparks a bit.
More Cybermen come out of the hatch, and Jamie shoots them with the cyber gun.
He shoots one, and then he, like, goes over to the hole. He goes over to the hatch hole, and he looks down, and he's like, there's more coming! And he just sticks the gun in there and shoots them, so you don't have to see that. I'm pretty sure that was a money-saving technique. There was supposed to be two that he shoots. Let's just leave one down in the hatch and have it happen off-screen.
And then he puts the gun on the table, even though there are a couple of established bad guys. I mean, one of them's probably dead, and the other one might be dead at this point, but he puts it on the table, and the doctor decides to go down the hatch. Which I'm not sure why.
Maybe he's wanting to freeze
them. He has to make sure. Yeah, he's trying to get them all back in the tomb and freeze them. And if you just close the hatch, he doesn't know for sure that he won't just find a way out of the hatch. So he has to make sure that they're back in the tomb and frozen.
And he can't go alone. And Jamie's like, I'll go. Nope, I'm going to bring Toberman. I'm not going without Toberman. Again. And he says to Toberman, oh, it's their evil. Evil must be destroyed. And he's being very Ninth Doctor at that point. They're evil and we have to destroy them. Which is very much like the Ninth Doctor with that one Dalek. Like, that was what it felt like to me. Where he's just being hateful.
I've also heard, like, Matt Smith got a lot of his stuff from this particular serial. And I can sort of see it.
Yeah, well, this serial exists, so...
I mean, specifically with, like, his hands. He, like, rubs his hands a lot and, you know, wrings them and stuff. And Eleven does that a lot as well. I can sort of see the influence a bit here. Because he does that anytime he's trying to manipulate somebody. You gotta do this thing because morals... And he's sort of nervous about it. But really, it's just like, you gotta do this thing because that's what I want you to do.
Cleek's back up. He takes the gun from the table. He is alive, apparently. He goes down the hatch, yeah.
The doctor freezes the Cybermen, and Cleek unfreezes them. Because this keeps happening.
It's a lot of yo-yo plotting.
It's hot and cold.
Toberman hits the mind control prep table in anger when they get there. Understandably, because that's where they hypnotized him or whatever. And the doctor asks him to watch the sleeping Cybermen while he turns the freezer back on. And that's when Cleek turns it back off and points a gun at the doctor. It's a lot of people turning things on and off and on and off and on and off in this episode. Controller is dead. Now I shall control them. They'll do what I say.
Still thinks that he can control them.
You see, doctor, yours is the privilege to witness for the first time the union between mass power and my absolute intelligence.
He's the worst.
He is phenomenally stupid.
Cleek's gonna be the new controller.
At least it's not just because he wants gold. At least he wants something solid like power.
So wait, gold's not solid?
Gold is solid. Power is literally an abstract concept.
He is not wrong, Tony.
Okay. I mean, like, it seems like gold is a step to getting power. Where it's like, why do you want this specific thing when you could just be like...
Give me power.
Yes.
Well, that's gold, what you want.
Yeah, gold itself isn't gonna, like, do anything. You get gold, and then you have to, like, exchange it for money.
And then you have to exchange the money for power.
It's so many steps behind.
This guy just wants power. But his step to power is he wants to be the controller of the Cybermen, which he can't be without becoming a Cyberman, but he doesn't want to become a Cyberman. His plan is very, very flawed. Because the Cybermen don't want to be controlled by a human.
They've made this very clear multiple times, and yet he's still just just keeps trying. He perseveres. I'll give him that.
He is what we call stupid. And the doctor pretends to share his view. Cleek totally falls for it. He's like, oh, you get it. And the doctor is like, well, now I know you're mad. I just wanted to make sure. And Hopper reports the fuel system being fixed to Victoria. And
which it originally was supposed to take 3 days. And I feel like this has been a day.
It was quicker than expected. And Cleek is still on his fucking villain rant.
Jamie's down there now, too, because...
he snuck down there.
When Cleek was talking to the doctor, then the doctor was all like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He, like, sort of gestures at him. He's, like, gesturing to Jamie, who's behind Cleek, to, like, take out Cleek. But Cleek catches on really quick, surprisingly. And is like, whoa, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, you, get over there with the doctor. I'm on to you. So Jamie's down there now as well.
Cleek keeps going on his... villain rant, and the doctor is like, fine, kill us. And Cleek is like, no, I have a better idea. I shall leave you to the Cybermen. They'll figure something out to do with you.
Then immediately a Cyberman like grabs Cleek. He's like, I'll leave you to the Cybermen, and then immediately gets grabbed by them.
That went well for him. He's killed right now, probably. And Toberman fights the Cybermen while the doctor and Jamie fiddle with the freezer controls.
And then refreeze the Cybermen who
when they play...
slip back into their... like, they just play the footage of them as, like, breaking out of the thing. They just play it backwards.
Yeah, but first Toberman makes the Cybermen he's fighting lactate.
He, like, rips off, like, his, like, battery pack thing on the front of it.
And foam just squirts out of it.
Yeah, well, he hits them there, and then it's this white foam. I'm assuming it's white, or maybe it's just very lit.
Oh no, my toothpaste!
Well, it looks like shaving cream.
Apparently that was deemed too violent by some people back in the day. It was too much. Like, it's a little too... I don't want to say gory, because, I mean, it's not.
I mean, I can see some things in this serial being seen as too violent, but that, specifically? Not all the people dying. Not all the gunshots.
No.
I think it did get called out for being too violent in general, but that scene specifically got called out as being a bit too much. Stuff is pouring out of this dude.
But it's a Cyberman. It's white foam.
I just realized you've been calling him Cyberman too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm picking it up. The freezer comes back on, and the Doctor and Jamie and Toberman come out of the hatch, and it closes behind them.
Then the Doctor...
is rewiring things.
Sabotaging the hatch controls and door, and...
he just plugs it in differently. It's like, even if they figure out the code, that because things are rewired differently, it's not going to work. Unless they're like the Americans and just pull it up and see where the wires go.
He turns the electricity back on.
So the Doctor probably murdered someone by doing that.
Yeah, yeah. He literally does by the end of the episode. He specifically...
like it's going to make a fatal shock.
He specifically says, I'm wiring this to give anyone who touches the doors, the hatch, the controls, any of it, a fatal shock.
Which is, that's not cool, yo.
The doctor is pretty ruthless here.
Put up a sign or something, maybe. I don't know.
Sign.
Do not go in there.
Do not touch for fear of life.
There's Cybermen in there, and they're alive, like, seriously. And also, they kill people, and also, you're not going to be able to use them for your own gain, because they're going to just turn you into a Cyberman, and you're not going to be able to be you anymore. Like, he needs to put a real proper warning in a lot of languages.
They might have left a warning, because as far as I know, I don't think they moved Toberman's body. It's shitty, but that is a warning. There's a dead guy there, not going in.
There's another Cyberman. The doctor says run.
It's not another Cyberman. It's the controller. It's the one that Toberman threw into the thing. He gets back up. It's the cyber controller. You can tell because of his head.
But yeah, the doctor says, when I say run, run.
Which is the second time he said that?
Yes.
He said it in the last serial, too. He specifically says it to Jamie.
Both times.
So it's becoming a thing, the doctor telling people to run. And they run out. And the door might shock them, so they have to use boards or rebars or something to close it.
Yeah, they just grab, like, 2x4s that were laying by the door.
They get pushed off by the doors, because there's a cyber controller on the other side. And Toberman sacrifices himself to close it. He died a hero, but man, was he an underdeveloped and stereotypical character.
And also, that kind of means the doctor is responsible for his death.
That is sort of directly the doctor's fault.
Did the doctor basically killed him?
But then basically everybody says goodbye, and they go off in their own separate ways.
Yeah, time to fuck right off.
But then we see that a Cyberman escaped and sort of goes up to Toberman's body.
And we get a close-up of Toberman's hand, which is he's got a Cyberman hand.
Who knows? Maybe they'll bring him back and do more racist shit.
Yeah, maybe he'll come back as a Cyberman.
They did. They just left him there.
Yeah.
Rude. Rude as hell. That is the end of the Tomb of the Cybermen.
They should have given him a Spock funeral, at least, where they put him in a box and they send him off to a planet with a device that's going to bring life to that planet. And then he's going to be a baby. And he's going to grow up to be an adult over the course of a movie. And I'm talking about the Star Trek movies where that happened to Spock.
Spoilers! But that's it. That's the Tomb of the Cybermen.
That was a serial that exists?
Vince.
Which we haven't said, by the way, but...
yeah, this entire thing exists.
The entire thing exists. We got it on DVD, and it was beautiful.
Beautiful. Yeah, it was so... It's so clean and crisp. Because, you know, great. It's on DVD and not some blurry reconstruction.
It exists. And that's the best thing we can say about it. It's not good. I mean, there are things in it that are good, but overall, as a whole, it's an idiot plot, and I specifically don't like idiot plots, unless it's hilarious. I did sit through probably all of Smallville, and that was a series laden with idiot plot after idiot plot after idiot plot. It should have been called Idiot Plot the Series. This serial felt like Smallville in the sense that it was just idiots doing moronic things while they're supposed to be geniuses. Here are geniuses being really moronic, and it doesn't quite compute. But there are things I like, such as the hand-holding moment. That was good. There was the little moment with the doctor and Victoria talking about loss and moving forward. That was a good moment. But there was so much unfortunate racism, futuristic sexism. For this to be the serial that exists among this bunch of serials that don't exist, it's unfortunate that it's this one. It's just, those are my final thoughts. It's not very good. But watch it!
Because it exists!
And you get to see these actors be... I mean, Jamie is great, and the Doctor is great, other than, you know, some of the things that he does. And the Americans are great.
Great's a strong word.
I really enjoyed the Americans. The way the captain's lips protrude when he talks, he's got this weird crooked grin when he's talking, and his lips protrude, and it's a very strange thing that he's just doing to get the accent. And it's adorable that he's really leaning into that accent. He is trying way hard. He is trying maybe a little too hard. And that's kind of what I like about him. It's charming. So yeah, there's stuff I like. Those are my final thoughts, probably.
I'd say definitely that scene between the Doctor and Victoria make the serial. Mm. Like, if you're telling someone, oh, you have to watch it, it's basically for that scene. And the hand-holding, which was adorable. It's not my favorite, but anytime you get to see existing footage of two, he does such great acting, you know, like very physical acting. It's a shame that a lot of it you don't get to see. It's kind of a mess as far as every other aspect.
As far as the story and the writing and the characters.
The pacing, the characters. But it's Doctor Who and it's fun.
Yeah, all the stuff you guys said. I like the handholding. I liked the one scene with Victoria. But for the most part, there's a lot of back and forth that's just killing time. You got the back and forth of the hatch opening and closing and freezing and unfreezing, which is just stalling so that you can fill 4 episodes worth of material. And I like Victoria sometimes, but her characterization sort of jumps back and forth a lot between being this snarky sort of I do what I want and also just being kind of stupid and doing stupid things or not doing the things that she says she's going to do.
Right, she's very loud about being like, I'll do what I want, I'll go with you, I'll do this, but then ultimately doesn't fight too much.
And when she does things that she wants to do, it's the stupid things. It's the things she really shouldn't do because there's no benefit to them and there's something dangerous that's going to happen as a result of it.
Well, to be fair, her taking the Cyberman did actually give her the upper hand when it attacked Captain.
That turned out well. It could have easily gone horribly wrong.
It does have the same problem I've had with the previous Cyberman serials, which is a big cast of characters, none of whom I really care about. This one actually did a little bit better than the previous two of giving people different personalities and stuff. Even still, like, some of of them, like a good handful of them, I was like, I don't really remember who you are. Especially the first handful that die. I mean, they die really quickly, so they don't get much time to be established. But even still, they're just fodder. And I feel like that happens a lot. It's just like there's a bunch of characters because they're fodder. Why do the Cybermen have this like weird ancient Egyptian mythology surrounding them? That seems a little weird. Like, they're robot people. What?
Like, why do they have a tomb?
Well, yeah, they're basically fucking mummies. That's what they are.
No, it's like cryogenics. There's an expedition. Chamber.
This is a mummy movie.
This is a classic pyramid story, yeah.
All right.
It's just science fictionized. There's the tomb. They have the fucking stencils on the wall. They break the curse. There's the one guy that's like, this place is cursed, which is in every goddamn mummy movie. And then it's true. It's cursed and the mummies come out and attack you. But instead of mummies, it's Cybermen. And the guy wants the power of the mummies, but he wants the power of the Cybermen. This is a mummy episode dressed in science fiction.
That's a classic thing to do as well. You do like vampire stories with Cybermen. You can do zombie stories with Cybermen. And you can do like this, a mummy story.
I just feel like that doesn't translate greatly. I don't know. It seems weird. Like, I don't imagine Cybermen having this sort of society.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work.
It doesn't gel with who they are. But yeah, I mean, it's watch it because it's like there's not a lot of two that exists and get as much as you can. But it's not great. There's some good moments, but there's also a lot of bad moments in racism. So do what you want.
Live your life how you're gonna live.
Vince, how would you do this if this was New Who?
I wouldn't remake this. I would sequelize it. I mean, some elements, I guess you could remake it as well. In a sort of, like, sequel remake-y way, where you, like, you bring back certain elements of it. I would definitely bring back the Brotherhood of Logicians, and I would really lean into the fact that this is a society of people who are founded on this idea of logic as, like, the ultimate power thing, but they are terrible at logic. And I would lean into the joke of that, of how terrible they are at logic, and be pointing it out at every turn, and be just really obvious about how terrible they are at logic, and maybe make some reference to, like, the Brotherhood of Logicians were really a group that was all about promoting logic and blah, 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 and over time it fell into the hands of people who are just terrible at logic and just want power. And it became about power, and through this weird perversion of logic that doesn't really have any basis in actual logic. As for the Tomb of the Cybermen part of it, I think you could maybe do a thing where you end up on a planet and you go down and you find Cybermen who have been frozen, not necessarily in ice, but in like in some sort of like they're in an off state, and it's like a graveyard of just apparently dead Cybermen, and they're in some sort of stasis. They're like just sitting around or something, or standing, whatever, and somebody just wants to wake them up because they're from the Brotherhood of, like, I think there's stuff that you can use as long as you, like, really lean into what the idea is. And what you wouldn't do is have people turn things on and turn them off again, open them and close them again, and open them and close them, and wake up and go back to sleep, and wake up. And if you have the Cybermen wake up, you have them wake up once, and it's like at the end of the episode. If you're looking at it as a three act structure, like the last act break would be when they wake up. That's when, like, shit hits the fan. Or maybe it's the middle of the episode. That would also possibly work. But, like, they wake up once, and once they're awake, until you get them back into stasis or whatever at the end. If somebody pushes a button, that button has been pushed, and you don't get to push it again. Mainly the most interesting part to me would be the Brotherhood of Logicians, because I feel like the Brotherhood of Illogical Logicians is an idea that if you just lean into it, it works. It's just that this episode doesn't seem to know that it's stupid.
And there's one character who accidentally joined up because he thought it was the Brotherhood of Magicians.
Sure. His name is Joe, and he's American with a really, really fake American accent.
Hi, I'm Joe. I thought I was joining the Brotherhood of Magicians. So that's it, though. That's the Tomb of the Cybermen. We did it. We did another one.
Yay!
The Tomb of the Toberman.
Vince, anything you want to plug before we go?
My Twitter is at VincentEL. I'm currently in the VPC competition where I make songs with a guy called Sean Solo, according to certain prompts that we're trying to follow. And I don't know when you post this, if that competition is going to be over, but if it's still happening, it's at vpc4.nerdcore.co. And you can see there if it's still happening, and if there's anything you can vote for to help us possibly move toward a high position in the context. At the time of recording, we've done round one, and before that, round zero, the introduction round, which is unofficial. Oh, and my YouTube channel, Swenglish, yeah, and also I'm on SoundCloud, Vincent EL. I'm also on Bandcamp at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And also soundcloud.com/ill_Eden for my other project.
And if you like us, you can check out watchyourasslawn.com. We're on Twitter at watchyourass. If you want to help support the show, you can go to watchyourasslawn.com/support. And there's a link to our Patreon, which is just patreon.com/watchathon. There's a whole bunch of different reward levels there. You can watch us. Watch the episodes. You can watch uncut video of us recording the podcast, all sorts of stuff, get stuff a day early. And also on our support page, there is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can buy DVDs of the serials for us, and you'll become a sponsor of that episode of the podcast. And we'll mention you on the show and put you on our Friends of Rassilon page. Leave a review on iTunes, because we don't have enough reviews on iTunes. I think we have one.
Do we have one?
We have one.
That's very exciting. I didn't think we had one.
It's jazz. So leave reviews, you guys.
It really helps a lot.
That's it. That's been the Tomb of the Cybermen. We'll be back next time for the Abominable Snowman, which may or may not have a guest. It depends on how busy he is, because he claimed this episode a while back, and he may now be kind of too busy to do it. We'll see. It may just be us. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. We love you.
Stay calm and wrestle on.
I guess.
I like that catchphrase. Just for the record, I like it.
I'll allow it.
Bye.
Man, you just blew yourself a pair of doors.